This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. Democrats are defending the necessity of impeachment, even if President Trump is not removed from office, while Republicans are denouncing the integrity of the constitutional process. AP's Ben Thomas reports.
House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler tells ABC's This Week the impeachment is necessary.
This president sought foreign interference in the 2016 election. He is openly seeking foreign interference in the 2020 election.
But Republicans are denouncing the integrity of the constitutional process. Also appearing on ABC's This Week, Senator Ted Cruz.
For weeks and months, they've been promising evidence of criminal conduct. They abandoned all of that and admitted that the evidence doesn't support all of their attacks that have happened before.
The House plans to vote Wednesday on two articles of impeachment, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. Ben Thomas, Washington.
New Zealanders observed a minute of silence on Monday to honor the victims of last week's fatal volcanic eruption. Reuters' Emma McCarthy reports recovery efforts continue for the final two bodies.
Recovery teams have been unable to locate the final two bodies missing 6 days after a volcanic eruption on New Zealand's White Island. Clad in hazmat suits, eight police search and rescue staff were deployed for 75 minutes on Sunday to search an area where their information suggested one body possibly remained. New Zealand's Deputy Police Commissioner Mike Clement told reporters the search was unsuccessful.
But I can say that we've found no further bodies in that area.
Six bodies were successfully retrieved from the island on Friday by a New Zealand military team and taken to the mainland for disaster victim identification.
That is Reuters' Emma McCarthy reporting. For more on any of today's top news, please go to voanews.com. This is VOA News. Officials in Afghanistan confirmed Sunday the United States plans to withdraw thousands of troops from the country. Sources in Kabul tell VOA the drawdown process is expected to start in 3 months. The United Nations' longest climate talks ever ended in Madrid Sunday, with countries agreeing to increase carbon-cutting commitments next year, but postponing clear-cut decisions in key areas. Lisa Bryant has more for VOA from Paris.
There was some progress in compromise. The European Union, with the exception of Poland, pledged this past week to reach net zero emissions by 2050. Delegates agreed to enhance emissions cutting plans, but they failed to agree on clear targets, rules for carbon markets, or financing for poorer nations to adapt and respond to climate change. That adds pressure for next year, when the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement begins to be implemented. Here's a reaction from Costa Rica's delegation.
We did not quite get there this time, but we have progressed.
The talks were backdropped by a series of alarming findings on the growing impact of climate change on our oceans, forests, and glaciers. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
More than 2,000 government, UN, and business leaders, as well as representatives from civil society and humanitarian agencies, are gathering to attend the first-ever Global Refugee Forum. The three-day event, which opens Monday in Geneva, aims to generate new approaches and long-term commitments to help refugees in the communities that host them. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Organizers of the forum will be rolling out the red carpet for heads of state from Germany, Turkey, Pakistan, Costa Rica, Ethiopia, Somalia, as well as other prominent individuals who will be arriving for this seminal event. Much is at stake. More than 70 million people worldwide are forcibly displaced by war, conflict, and persecution. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash tells VOA the world's piecemeal approach in dealing with displacement and refugee affairs has to change.
This is bringing everyone together at the same place on the same table.
The private sector also has an increasingly important role to play in responding to the growing needs of refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Mexican authorities say human remains discovered last month at a farm outside the city of Guadalajara have been confirmed as belonging to at least 50 people. Prosecutors say they have identified 13 people so far, 12 males and one female, all of whom were previously listed as missing. For news on the go, please download the VOA mobile app. In Washington, I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today's Monday, December 16th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Gambian government has approved a protest for today, calling on President Adama Barrow to step down.
When they sat together in 2016 and drafted this whole coalition MOU, they wanted to establish a strong foundation for democracy. So we started on the foundation of having a leader who did not have any advantages of incumbency.
Public sector workers in Liberia will embark on a slowdown today, Monday, to demand months of salary arrears. An analyst says former Sudanese President Bashir must still face trial in the ICC. And Zimbabwe authorities arrest the wife of the vice president on fraud allegations.
She's most likely to appear in court on Monday, 16 December. Charges relate to externalization of foreign currency and money laundering.
John Makamure is a member of the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission. Fighting continue over the weekend in Libya and the Madrid climate talks end in acrimony and disappointment. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A nationwide protest will take place today, Monday, in the Gambia to call on President Adama Barrow to step down from power. The protesters want President Barrow to respect the promise he made that he will lead a transitional government for 3 years. Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
A pressure group calling itself 3 years journey is behind the protest march. The march would last for 4 hours. The protesters have been confined to a non-residential area to avoid any possible fracas or destruction to public property. According to the protest permit issued by the Inspector General of Police to the protesters, the protest march would begin at Sting Corner in the suburbs of Joswan to the outskirts of Dentin Bridge. Dentin Bridge is located outside the capital city, Banjul. On Saturday, the United Kingdom-based Gambian lawyer Yankuba Dabo appeared on the Kerfado online television to brief Gambians about the objective of today's protest march.
We want to mount pressure on our president until it becomes unconscionable for him to continue to remain at the state house, but to also take off the controversy.
President Barrow says he had no plans of relinquishing power anytime soon. He maintains that he was elected to serve in office for 5 years. Though he has decided to walk away from his campaign promise of running a 3-year transitional government, Barrow is now working on setting up his own political party, which he intends to launch sometime in the new year. The 3-year journal protesters are calling on Barrow to respect his campaign promise and avoid any form of self-perpetual rule in the Gambia.
The bottom line is, when they sat together in 2016 and then drafted this whole coalition MOU, A, they wanted to end self-perpetuation of our leader, of our next leader. And then two, they said they want to establish a strong foundation for democracy. So we start on a footing or on the foundation of having a leader who did not have any advantages of incumbency.
Under the coalition government memorandum of understanding arrangement, Barrow was not supposed to take part in future elections after the completion of his 3 years rule. But it seems that MOU agreement has been dashed away. Barrow wants to prolong his rule. Madi Cisse is a Gambian parliamentarian. He's the United Democratic Party member for Serekunda West. Cisse is among the supporters of the protest march. He says he's calling on parents not to allow their kids to attend school on Monday. He adds that Monday is a national protest march in the Gambia. He also says he's going to ensure that his kids would not be in school today. The organizers of the 3-year protest march said another protest march would be organized in the new year, which would compel Barrow to step down from power. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandere by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The consortium of public sector workers, including public school teachers, will embark on a nationwide go slow today, Monday, in Liberia to demand payment of their salary arrears and other concerns. Civil Service Union President Moiba Johnson says the government owes the workers as much as 3 months' salary arrears.
At around 3 o'clock at the National Teachers Association head office on the 12th Street, and we are reinforced our earlier call to government to live up to the commitment and concerns of public sector workers as ensured within the memorandum of understanding that we entered into with government since the 21st of October 2019. So far, government has made some progress, but this progress are not sufficient.
How much salary arrears does the government owe the public workers? How much? 2, 3 months, 1 month, or what?
So, beginning the 15th day of this month, it's not 3 months, including December. Government told us that it is unable to settle our December salary in December. Rather, this amount will be paid to us, and the December amount will be paid to us in January. Well, we interposed no objection to that. We said to them, we realize and empathize with government because of the current economic situation that government itself is facing. However, you are asking us that you pay the other 2 months, which is October and November, segmentally, and that is by the 20th of this month, our October salary shall have been paid, and then from the 21st to the 31st of December, our November will also be paid. Even though we please ask that government be able since indeed government is unable to pay the 3 months and that is including the December altogether in December, but the 2 months we are talking about, we are asking them to combine them to pay to us. That is October and November. Because Mr. Borden, as we speak, is not all civil servants have credited and we actually do not know where to turn it any longer to credit. So as they be able to settle some immediate domestic concerns, including school fees for our children are in school as well as being rented. As you speak now, most civil servants are threatened to be thrown out of the zero area they are residing in.
What do you make of the Ministry of Education ordering the closure of all public schools as of the 13th of December because of this threatening or this impending strike? What do you make of that?
It is rather unfortunate, actually. And we did expect the Ministry of Education to get such part. Why? Because we feel that it's actually counterproductive to the very sector that he's heading. We think that by doing this, you are further exacerbating the situation.
Mwaiba Johnson is the president of the Civil Service Union of Liberia. He's speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. Zimbabwe Vice President Constantino Chiwenga's wife, Mary, is in police custody in the capital, Harare, facing charges of attempting to force the couple's marriage, money laundering, and externalizing more than $1 million. Commissioner John Makamuri of the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission, also known as ZAG, says Mary Chiwenga is locked up at the Roseville Police Station. She is expected to appear in court today, Monday. Makamuri spoke with VOA Zimbabwe Service reporter Jonga Kandemiri about Mary Chiwenga's arrest.
Is most likely to appear in court on Monday, 16 December. Charges related to externalization of foreign currency and money laundering. Those are the main charges.
Who are the complainants in this case?
The state is the complainant.
We also understand there are allegations of forgery.
Yes, that is also part of the charges.
What is she accused of doing?
It relates to a marriage ceremony between herself and the vice president, Chiwenga, that she is alleged to have forged the documents to facilitate that marriage ceremony without the VP, the vice president's knowledge.
So where is she as we speak?
She is at Roseville Police Station.
There are some who are accusing the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission of engaging in a catch and release game where some top government officials and top citizens arrested and later released. Zach saying that no, they are just helping with investigations, they are witnesses and all that. What can you say about that?
No, I want to dismiss those statements with the contempt that they deserve. Our job is law enforcement together with ZRP, right? Then we also have got the National Prosecuting Authority, which is there to, and Zach doesn't interfere with the prosecution role of the National Prosecuting Authority. And Zach does not interfere with the role of our court, right? So I think the public really understand the mandate of ZAC. We don't catch and release. What we do is if we receive complaints, right, and if our witnesses come forward and, file cases, we investigate, and then we prepare dockets, which we submit to the National Prosecuting Authority. Right? So sometimes we can arrest someone and then release that person.
it doesn't necessarily mean that that person has been acquitted. It is the courts that acquit, right? We can arrest someone and then question someone and then release that person pending further investigation. So it doesn't mean that the person has now been acquitted. So there's a difference. And during investigation, the law doesn't say you can't release someone when you are still investigating. You can.
In the case of Ms. Chiwenga, how much is she alleged to have externalized?
It's a lot of money. I think just over $1 million.
And we are looking at a vice president's wife. Some may say that this may be a political issue or the ZAC being used to settle scores.
No, we are not being used to care about any other issues happening. If we receive evidence from anyone that is pointing to suspected cases of corruption, looting of public funds, for example, if we receive that evidence, we open investigations. No matter the contextual background, we don't care about other issues. We care about the suspected case of corruption. That's what we look into.
John Makamuri is a member of the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission. He spoke with VOA Zimbabwe Service reporter Jonga Kandimiri from Harare. Today is Monday, December 16th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. An analyst says former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir must still face trial before the International Criminal Court, the ICC. Mr. Bashir was sentenced on Saturday to 2 years in jail after he was found guilty for corruption. Suleiman Baldo, a senior policy advisor at the Washington-based Enough Project, says Bashir still faces charges before the ICC for alleged war crimes.
Former President Bashir is still facing serious charges in Sudan. With regard to the ICC, people would now require that he should be facing the same charges as the Prosecutor General of the ICC has ordered his arrest for. That is to say, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and genocide. And this in the event that there is resistance in the army in particular to hand him over to the ICC. People would be happy if he is facing the same charges of the ICC before the judiciary in Sudan.
I think the problem that the ICC faced while President Bashir was president was that no African country or no country was willing to arrest him, even including South Africa. Do you think now that can change? Do you think the new government in Sudan might want to hand him over?
The new government in Sudan is a power-sharing arrangement between the representative of the political opposition and the social movement that led the protest and caused the downfall of President Bashir and the army. And the army is the one that has served Bashir over 30 years. The general commanders of the army were complicit and were participants in all the crimes that were committed against the civilian population in Darfur. And therefore, realistically, it is not to be expected that the army would agree to his handover to the ICC. However, they may well agree that he faced the same charges and they be held accountable for the same crimes before the Sudanese judiciary. And the civilian-led government is doing an extensive effort to really purge the judiciary from representatives that were appointed on political basis because of their loyalty to the regime of former President Bashir, and to ensure that they will uphold the law basically impartially and according to the letter of the law.
If Africa keeps insisting that people like former President Bashir should go before the ICC, what does that say about undermining African institutions like the African courts? I mean, many have argued that the African courts can handle the process by themselves.
The ICC is a court of last resort. When there is no capacity or when there is no expertise in African courts to deal with international crimes, then the ICC will come in following the principles of complementarity between domestic laws and judiciary and the international legal system.
Suleiman Baldo is a senior policy advisor at the Washington-based Enough Project. Fighting in Libya continued over the weekend after Khalifa Haftar, Libya's de facto eastern leader, announced what he called a final assault on the western capital, Tripoli. Heather Murdoch reports from Tripoli.
On Friday, Khalifa Haftar, the strongman who leads Libya's eastern military, announced a final assault on the western capital, Tripoli, after nearly 9 months of battling to take over the city. Tensions quickly escalated as both sides anticipated ratcheted up international support for their enemy, with Russian troops believed to be supporting Haftar's army, known as the Libyan National Army, and Turkey promising to send forces to support the Western Government of National Accord if requested. Fighting continued throughout the weekend, but by Sunday afternoon, neither side had gained a significant amount of ground. Media supporting Haftar's forces claimed they entered part of Tripoli's city center, while locals inside Tripoli said although they heard airstrikes, they didn't see any of Haftar's forces, and fighting remained confined to the suburbs. Government of National Accord officials also claimed a degree of victory, saying they had retaken some ground. Analysts say Libya is stuck in a standoff, with neither side having a significant military advantage or recognizing each other as legitimate. Haftar supporters are saying Tripoli fighters are extremist militias, while in Tripoli, locals and officials say Haftar is a strong man who aims to be a new Libyan dictator. I'm Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Tunis.
The United Nations' longest climate talks ever ended in Madrid on Sunday, with countries agreeing to increase carbon-cutting commitments next year, but postponing clear-cut decisions in key areas. Critics accused several of the world's biggest polluters, including the United States, of blocking progress to address a growing climate crisis. Lisa Bryan has more from Paris.
There was some progress and compromise. The European Union, with the exception of Poland, pledged this past week to reach net zero emissions by 2050. Delegates agreed to enhance emissions cutting plans, but they failed to agree on clear targets, rules for carbon markets, or financing for poorer nations to adapt and respond to climate change. That adds pressure for next year, when the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement begins to be implemented. Here's a reaction from Costa Rica's delegation.
We did not quite get there this time, but we have progressed. As many others have expressed, we're disappointed that we once again failed to find agreement.
The talks were backdropped by a series of alarming findings on the growing impact of climate change on our oceans, forests, and glaciers, even as greenhouse gases continue to rise to record levels. Critics accuse big emission countries like Brazil, Australia, and the United States, which is set to leave the climate pact next year, of blocking progress in Madrid. As the talks overshot their Friday deadline, frustrated activists dumped manure outside the conference center.
What we're seeing coming out of these talks right now should set off alarm bells.
David Waskow is International Climate Director for World Resources Institute, a Washington, D.C.-based environmental think tank.
The biggest emitters are not moving at the pace and scale that they need to get us on track for a safe world.
World Wildlife Fund also accused a number of big polluters of holding the talks hostage, saying their position sharply contrasted with science, real-life evidence, and rising calls from the street for more climate action, especially from young people. Earlier in the week, Swedish teen climate activist Greta Thunberg accused countries of clever accounting to get around emissions cuts. Speaking to delegates as the Madrid talks wrapped up, another youth leader, Sofia Mulwick from Norway, urged leaders to do more.
And youth are finished being your inspiration. Please use our solutions. Take the right decisions for our future and for all the people suffering the consequences of climate change today.
She urged countries not to let young people down. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Time now for Daybreak Africa. Sporting here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Qatar, where the FIFA Club World Cup is now into the semi-finals. Former Swansea striker Bafétimbi Gomis scored the winner as Al Hilal beat Esperance Sportive de Tunis 1-0 to reach the FIFA Club World Cup semi-finals. 8 minutes after coming off the bench, Gomis opened the scoring with a brilliant volley. Esperance will now contest the fifth-placed playoff on Tuesday, while Al Hilal will face Copa Copa Libertadores of winners Flamengo in the semi-final later that day. Staying with African football, Ghana's president Nana Akufo-Addo says the direction of Ghanaian football must be for the Black Stars to win the African Cup again and also compete at the global football level. He said his government was ready to give the necessary support to drive football so the Black Stars could win their fifth AFCON, which has been an elusive search since annexing the fourth title in 1982. The president, however, declined to make any comments on the future of the current coach of the Black Stars, Kwesi Appiah, following Ghana's disappointing performance at the 2019 African Cup of Nations.
What we can do is to give maximum support to the new FA. We want the Black Stars, at the very least, to win the Africa Cup again. That's the only direction that we want to get. And then beyond that, as much as possible, also to compete at the global level.
And now to boxing news. Ghanaian boxer Richard Kumi lost his IBF lightweight belt to Teofimo Lopez in a spectacular second-round technical knockout at the Madison Square Garden. Richard Kumi, in the past, had won the Ghanaian lightweight title, the International Boxing Federation Continental African Lightweight title, African Boxing Union Lightweight title, and the International Boxing Federation Intercontinental Lightweight title, alongside Commonwealth Lightweight title. The Ghanaian boxer, after the fight, attributed his second round defeat to fate.
I mean, Teofimo did great. I mean, we went in there to do what we got to do. He got his shot and he capitalized on it. Fair enough for him, and he did great. You know, he went in there with the best, and we give our hearts. You know, we did everything and give what the fans want, you know. But definitely, you know, champions do come back, and I'm definitely going to come back strong and become a two-time world champion.
Elsewhere in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, Kamaru Usman, known as the Nigerian Nightmare, has retained his UFC welterweight championship after a dramatic late stoppage to defeat trash-talking challenger Colby Covington in the final minutes of their main event bout at the UFC 245 in Las Vegas. The Nigerian battled toe-to-toe with his American rival through four hugely entertaining rounds at the T-Mobile Arena, breaking Covington's jaw with a huge punch in the third round. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A nationwide protest will take place today, Monday, in The Gambia to call on President Adama Barrow to step down from power. The protesters want President Barrow to respect the promise he made in 2016 that he will lead a transitional government for 3 years. The consortium of public sector workers in Liberia, including public school teachers, will embark on a nationwide gold slow today, Monday, to demand payment of their salary arrears and other concerns. Civil Service Union President Moimba Johnson said the government owes the workers as many as 3 months' salary arrears. And Zimbabwe Vice President Constantino Chiwenga's wife, Mary, is in police custody in the capital, Harare, facing charges of attempting to forge the couple's marriage, money laundering, and externalizing more than $1 million. Commissioner John Makamuri of the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission, also known as ZAG, says Mary Chiwenga is locked up at the Roseville Police Station. And that is it for this Monday, December 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Bote in Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
This weekend, add some spice to your life. Tune in to Music Time in Africa. Hi there, I'm Heather Maxwell. Join me this Sunday for 55 minutes of energizing, commercial-free Pan-African music and music news. You'll hear reggae, maskandi, mande, afrobeats, alternative, traditional music, and more. Vintage Tune takes you back to 1971 Democratic Republic of Congo. And you'll also meet Northern Ghana's record-breaking, award-winning musical hero, Fancy Gadam.
So, Fancy,
yeah.
I have been wanting to meet you for a while.
My name is Fancy.
Spice up your life this weekend with me on Music Time in Africa. Sunday and the following Saturday at 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time.